You're with The Record. I'm Marcy Silman.
And I'm Ross Reynolds. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here. One line from Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. As it turns out, Lincoln was wrong about the world remembering his words. The speech is almost 151 years old, but it is one of the best-known and most admired speeches in history. Documentary filmmaker Ken Burns celebrates the speech in his new film, The Address. It's quite different from the usual Ken Burns film. The Address is a documentary about students at the Greenwood School, an all-boys school in Putney, Vermont. The students are required to memorize and publicly recite the Gettysburg Address. All the Greenwood students have learning disabilities, including speech and language deficits.
From these, it is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion.
That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain.
That this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
That's a clip from Ken Burns' new film, The Address. It was assembled from 320 hours documenting students who memorized and recited Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. Ken Burns joins us today from the Radio Foundation in New York City. How are you doing, Ken?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me.
Why did you choose to tell this story?
I live in rural New Hampshire. Across the river is Putney, Vermont, a tiny little village. And in Putney is the Greenwood School. About a dozen years ago, they invited me to be a judge of their public recitation of the address that takes place around Lincoln's birthday in cold, cold February. I went there and just wept like a baby and kept coming back as a judge or just during the 3 months that they devote so much time to learning the address, to talk about the context, the historical context, talk about other things, and finally decided, you know, as the 150th anniversary approached, that was last November, that I wanted to make a film about it. Certainly out of my style, this is more cinema verite, but just understanding that the words can be given new meaning and have a new life, have a new birth of freedom, as Lincoln said in the address, by following this extraordinarily inspirational story of these young boys with learning differences that they overcome. And the Gettysburg Address is the way in which they escape the specific gravity of these differences, of these disabilities.
We see these boys struggling with the language, which doesn't roll off their tongue. What do you think they get from learning and reciting the words of the Gettysburg Address?
That's a really wonderful question. I think in the course of the film, you'll see a kind of almost utter transformation. The address is taught, obviously, in history classes. It's taught in English classes. It's taught in the remedial things. But it's taken in, and they get the meaning, too, and they hold on to it for the rest of their lives. And I think as we were editing that 320 hours down, we suddenly said, if they can do it, why can't we? We insisted that every person who worked on the film memorize the Gettysburg Address, and then we've issued a challenge. If you go to learntheaddress.org, you'll see all the living presidents from Carter to Obama. You'll see lots of celebrities in media and business, Bill Gates and Steven Spielberg and Uma Thurman and Taylor Swift and lots of journalists and senators, but more importantly, thousands and thousands of ordinary citizens who taken up our challenge in the last couple of months to not only memorize the address, but like the boys, do a public recitation and then upload it at learntheaddress.org. And it's just been a phenomenal thing. You know, we're so fractured in this country today, and everything's either red state or blue state, young or old, gay or straight, black or white, male or female, north, south, east, west. Any kind of division we can impose on the other, we do it for kind of relief. And yet we like to do stuff together. We yearn for community. And I think we like to sing in church. We like to sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game at the stadium. And here's a chance to take, in my mind, the greatest speech in American history and do something together.
You know, when you sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game, you're at the ball game. That's pretty easy to relate to. But how do these young boys in Vermont, beyond the beauty of the language in the Gettysburg Address, how do they relate to what it says to themselves who live in a very different time 150 years later?
Well, it's. I'm glad that you brought that up. I think it's utterly relevant, and let me tell you why. I think that Lincoln's doubling down on the Declaration in the Gettysburg Address. The Declaration, 47 years before, written by Thomas Jefferson, says all men are created equal. But Thomas Jefferson owned slaves. Abraham Lincoln freed those slaves and sort of said, look, we really do mean it. And he offers in the Gettysburg Address what I think is sort of like a 2.0 operating system to Jefferson's 1.0, definitely flawed. Jefferson meant all white men of property free of debt. We don't mean that anymore. And we haven't replaced the Gettysburg Address with a new operating system. When the first anniversary of 9/11 happened, there were no contemporary speeches. Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address was read. And it was as if words matter, and they do matter in our democracy, as if words could remind us why we agreed to cohere, and they can, and they serve as a kind of medicine, and I think that's what it is. There's an essential contemporariness to it. The first sentence of the Declaration, 67 years ago, is about the past. The second, now we are engaged in a great civil war, is about the present for Lincoln at that time, November 19th, 1863. But the rest of us is him pulling us into the future that we ought to have. It was said of T.R. that he had distance in his eyes. I think Abraham Lincoln did too. He could see not only beyond the curve of the earth sort of physically, but he could also see where we were going temporally, and he understood where it was. So there's an utter relevance to this moment. And I believe that about history in general. I mean, Faulkner said history is not was but is, and he was talking about the Civil War. And if you don't know where you've been, you can't possibly know where you are or where you're going. So the boys triangulate all of those various meanings, the poetry of the words from English, the history involved in it from their history classes, the struggles they themselves have mimic the struggles that the country is going through in the crucible of the Civil War, and then they have a kind of new birth of freedom as they internalize this extraordinary address and keep it with them like a talisman for the rest of their lives. I think it's hugely instrumental, inspirational for us as well, and that's why I issue the challenge to everybody to do it. And it's so interesting that no one said no. I mean, you can tape a version to your mirror, and for a couple days, I suppose you might curse me. But after that, once you've got it on your hard drive, you'll bless me, because it's something we're doing in common, as I said, but it's also something that you've done yourself, and there's a great satisfaction in knowing this remarkable address.
Well, rote learning, memorization, kind of has a bad name in education these days. It's considered to be unimportant. It's considered to be not very educational. That's obviously something you're fighting against.
Completely, completely. I guess rote memorization is terrible, but we've thrown the baby out with the bathwater. We know everywhere that our educational system is failing, and I suggest that it's the fact that we've gotten rid of things like rote memorization. We've gotten rid of civics. We've gotten rid of a reliance on history. We vacillate, think, oh, STEM, if we just do STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, we'll only catch up. Oh, no, but we've lost history and art and civics and philosophy and music. We got to put that back in. Sitting in front of us is civics, history, memorization. Memorization uses a part of our brain that we don't use that often. My dad, who was born in 1925, had like 5 or 6 hours on his hard drive of poems, long passages from Shakespeare, speeches, things like that. This was not something that he wrote, memorized. He felt it and lived it and could replay it for his sons. And he and I, my brother and I, have probably just a couple of hours on our hard drive, and our kids don't have anything. So put 2 minutes on your hard drive and see how transformative it is. And I'd like to suggest that bringing civics back, bringing a study of – and civics is about politics, that is to say how things work, not just in government but in life. And so I'd suggest that that might be the glue that might hold all of this now fractured and splintered educational system together. It may seem Pollyannish or simplistic, but it doesn't cost anything. It's just an idea that I think can move forward, and you begin with 67 years ago.
Ken Burns' documentary, The Address, is going to be airing at 9 o'clock this evening on KCTS Channel 9. Ken, thanks for telling us about it.
My pleasure. I hope we hear you uploading your address version as well as all of your listeners.
Okay.
At learntheaddress.org.
And say hi to Larry Josephson for me.
I will.
It's The Record on KUOW.